Blog Talk Radio. This is the EWN Radio Network.
When you come out and when you speak out, oh my gosh, she is such a harpy. You know, she's so brash that immediately there's a judgment that how often are we really in a safe place where we can say what we want to say, the way we want to say it, without this fear of judgment.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to this special series we're featuring here on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Life Interrupted Radio and our special series on autoimmune. Oh, my goodness. Just want to sort of take a nice deep breath and center myself. Guys, get nice and comfortable. And typically, I have a nice tea with me, but today I just had this urge. A few months ago, I started getting into juicing. I know I resisted it for the longest time. It looked like a lot of work, and I finally got it down to a system. And I have to tell you, it's really pretty good, and I think it has helped me a lot. Can't point to it exactly that that's what's helped my health, but it certainly hasn't hurt. Although I have to say, it does look a little odd. It's the strangest color. But anyway, it's a great juice. Got fresh turmeric in it, fresh ginger, celery, lemon, beets. Let's see, what else did it? Oh, carrots and a half an apple. It's odd looking, but really tasty. Oh, my goodness. So, anyway, what are you curled up with tonight? That's right. Well, thank you for joining us, because tonight we have a very, very special guest, and she is just, what I love about Christine is she's just such an out-of-the-box thinker. She always brings such interesting insights to any conversation, and her passion is for coaching, teaching, and sharing information. She just has a wide range of experience that covers everything from performing dance, education, elementary and secondary schools, nonprofit, community board organizations, oh my gosh, retailing administration, publishing, management. You can just know she brings just a plethora of ideas and experience to what we're going to talk about tonight. What we're going to talk about tonight is really important, because I know when we are not feeling well, it's really hard to communicate. And one of the things that Christine and I were talking about recently, and I said, we got to have a show on that, is called, we decided to title it Quiet by Nature, When Silence Helps and When It Hurts. Because I know sometimes when I wasn't feeling my best and I was at a medical appointment, and I would walk out of there going, doggone it, why didn't I speak up, or why didn't I say that? And so we're going to talk tonight about just ways to speak up, when to speak up, all those sorts of things. Because Christine's gentle approach and her intuition and her strong communication and organizational skills will help us recognize our own internal strengths and be able to quickly increase our confidence and remove any internal blocks you might have about communicating, speaking up, your performance, and achieve any desired results you want with ease, because she's just amazing. So welcome, Christine. Thank you for being on Life Interrupted Radio.
Thank you, Sharon. I appreciate your invitation, and I'm so happy to be able to spend this time with you and your audience. I look forward to this conversation.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, I think communicating what's going on for you in not only out in the outer world, and every day in the business world, but especially when it concerns our health, is critically important. Oftentimes, you know, you get in that white coat authority and you're afraid to speak up. You're afraid to, rock the boat, or like, I just don't know, and that sorts of things. So that's why when we were talking about this topic, I went, it's so important to bring it to the idea of our own self and our own health care. So let's talk a little bit about what you mean by quiet by nature and when silence helps and when it hurts.
Coming out of the gate, as much as I like to talk, I do believe that I have this quiet, contemplative side. And people have told me that. They look at me and they see me and they may think of me as a shrinking violet. And in some instances I am, but in other instances I can speak up and be courageous and be bold.
And I never would have said you were a shrinking violet, but go ahead.
some people have, some people do. And you know, part of it, Sharon, it depends on who you're with. I think as women, or I'm speaking for myself, as a woman, I've learned to a certain situation and I try to accommodate the situation or the people. And I'm not really being true to myself. So that's something I've had to learn over time. Even when you talk about health, it's a perfunctory type of thing. Hi, how are you? I'm fine. You don't really know. You don't really want to know the details of how I am necessarily. And if we stopped every time to say, well, you know, I'm not fine. This happened, that happened. This is how I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking. And we are socialized that way as a little girl. You know, my grandmother, my mother, they'd say, you know, be polite. Just say this.
Oh, yes.
And there is that aspect of me that does that. And there's sometimes, you know, there's a situation and you should speak out. Stop, there's a car coming. And there's a hesitation. That's not a sense, that's not the place for a hesitation. And there are other times, well, no, don't tell them that. And it's a moment by moment.
Even though it's screaming in your head.
You know, it's a moment by moment. You have a fraction of a second to make this decision that can have all these ramifications. And in certain situations, people would think, oh, Christine, yeah, she is so quiet. And you're like, who are you talking about? My gosh, she never shuts up.
Well, I can't say you never shut up, but I was like, you always have an opinion.
I always have an opinion. And depending on where I am and you know, with whom, the crowd that I'm in, I may say what's on my mind. I may not say what's on my mind. I may be saying what's on their mind. What's expected? What do they want me to say? How can I be accepted by this group or this crowd?
I'm glad you bring that up because I think, speaking as a woman, men probably, please chime in on the comment section over at Life Interrupted Radio if you go through this too, because I'm going to speak as a woman. This wanting to fit in, this accommodation that you've mentioned can be overwhelming to us at times. This, it's been so ingrained, as you said, from childhood that we should be a certain way, and it tends to be very accommodating.
It does, you know, and when we talked about this topic, quiet by nature, the thing is, some of this really is innate, and some of it is learned. And men may experience it as well as women, but they learn quickly on that it's not looked on with great admiration in social situations. So whether they want to or not, they quickly learn and behave a different way. Whereas women, you notice that, oh, you're accepted more if you are demure, if you're reticent, if you have this, you put on this persona of holding back. And when you come out and when you speak out, oh my gosh, she is such a harpy. You know, she's so brash that immediately there's a judgment that how often are we really in a safe place where we can say what we want to say, the way we want to say it without this fear of judgment. I need to look good here, to be accepted here. So I'm going to deny some part of myself. And every time we deny some part of ourselves, we're actually hurting ourselves. We're building up emotional frustration and you're doing physical harm to yourself because you need to express something. It's there. That thought is in your head. That feeling is in your body. And you're being called to share it. But you're afraid that somebody's going to say something and you don't express it. And then you spend the next week complaining, venting, getting a headache. He did this and I didn't say that, or she did this and I knew that before she did. But in the moment, you hold yourself back. And that's not helpful.
Not at all. And I know with your work at stressfreenow.info, that you guys talk, you and your husband Bob, talk a lot about how it affects us physically. And when we already have an autoimmune condition that compromises ourselves, stress can play such a huge part in a flare-up of our symptoms when we deny those parts of us that want to speak out, when we know that we want to share something. And I find it a lot in medical situations where we're talking about our symptoms or we're afraid to share the complete symptoms or the doctor poo-poos our symptoms. And we learn, like, okay, well, that's the last time I'm going to get that personal and share that symptom. Let's talk a little bit about some of the ways through your work with releasing stress and understanding the harm that stress can do to us. What are some of the ways that you found in communicating that we can walk through that, the more comfort, being able to speak our mind and being able to share what's going on for us?
Yes, definitely. One of the things that happened that I noticed with myself and with clients, if my client was maybe 4 or 5 years old, there wouldn't be a lot that needs to be undone and rediscovered. Sometimes the reason a client mightn't be telling me something is that they don't really know, they don't remember. They have masked and pushed down for so long. They just know that they're frustrated and they can't remember why. They can't remember their passion, what it was they loved. So, as you know, a lot of coaching work is just this sort of excavating and doing exercises and having conversations to find out what really is the heart of the person. It's there in all of us. But, you know, as you mentioned in my experience, I was an elementary school teacher. And the best way to see it is with little children. Very early on, we stop a child from being who they are. You know, when they're a baby, oh my gosh, you're wonderful. This is so great what you do. And then, you know, listen, don't talk now. The adults are talking. Or wait till later. Don't move. Don't this. And you want them to do things, and all of a sudden, it's don't, don't, don't. And we box them in, and we box them in, and we make them smaller, and we make them smaller. And as adults, we're still carrying that within ourselves.
Although I think we're doing it to ourselves with that somebody else's voice in our head. We don't need anybody else to say don't. That voice in our head says
don't. We've learned it.
We've
learned it so well. We've kept it there. And one of my favorite practices when I first learned ideokinesis, which that is the work of imagining movement to create new movement patterns. And I said, oh, that's really what I need for thinking, for feeling, for everything else. A lot of times we carry our tension in our body and we carry our memories in our body, and not everybody is aware of that. That's why we could, you know, probably all have a daily massage, daily reflexology. You know, we should all be running down to the corner Feldenkrais studio, although they're not Feldenkrais studios on every corner. But we have tension and memory and pain trapped in our physical body. And we're not aware of it. I mean, right now, if someone listens, just touch your shoulder. And how tight is that? You know, that's muscle. It shouldn't feel like a bone. And that's the level.
It's so funny you bring that up. I had a doctor say to me one time, you know, if it wasn't for stress, I don't know if you'd have any muscles at all.
Because we walk around sometimes with that level of stiffness and muscular tension. And you ask someone, are you tense? No, I'm not tense. Because that's their everyday state. So they have no idea what it is for their mind to be released, for them to be looking at the clouds and just reveling in that, reveling in doing nothing, reveling in not having a list or not performing. So these are the things, you know, as I work with someone, just to discover where they are and to help them to know where they are. Because before you can move, you need to have a pretty good idea. Are you going from New York to Florida? Are you going from California to Florida? Where are you now? Well, I'm in Omaha. Okay. So There needs to be a little inventory taking, a little self-reflection, because we forget how to see ourselves, because sometimes we're so busy performing and putting on a mask for our coworkers, our spouse, our children, that we don't remember who we are and we don't remember how we feel, and we've completely forgotten our voice because we're just using words to please other people, to be accepted, to be safe, and we're not telling the truth. So we can't recognize it.
But I'm glad you bring that up, that we really have to take some time and do some self-reflection, including understanding what we're feeling in our body, going to that place. Maybe we haven't been there in a long time, because we can't begin to speak what's going on for us until we really take the time to know what's going on for us.
Very true, very true. You just to get through life, and, you know, I do it in my day. We've got this performance anxiety, if you will, every day. I mean, my husband looks at me and he's like, what are you doing? Because I just feel I need to have the list and I need to check things off. And then if I didn't get this done, and those are my own voices coming to
yeah.
me that I've created. Yes, there may be an agreement that, say, you're doing an interview with Sharon today. You need to remember that and, you know, show up for that. But other things I create. I'm creating my tension and my pressure and my judgment. And those are the voices inside my head. And depending on who you're working with or who's at the receiving end of whatever you're producing, you actually may get that criticism back from them, or that praise or that encouragement. So sometimes we don't know. But the act of building something up in your mind without any outside validation, verification, you're causing yourself undue stress. You're causing yourself undue anxiety. You're making your bodily system work more than it has to. You're stepping on the brakes and stepping on the accelerator at the same time, and that's not good.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because you can imagine if you're stepping on the brakes at the same time as the accelerator, what the damage that does to your car. I can only imagine if we're doing that to our own body. No wonder we don't feel well, right? Because we're not getting in touch with ourselves and then ultimately not speaking our own truth. We need to take a quick commercial break here, Christine. This is so fascinating about understanding our body, what's going on for inside of us, and learning to speak our truth. But we'll be back after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
I just want to give a quick shout out to Barry Moltz, our new sponsor. Barry helps small businesses get unstuck. He has founded and run small businesses with a great deal of success and failure for over 15 years. And he knows the formula for taking your company to the next level. He also has a great podcast called Small Business Unstuck. So it's right here on Blog Talk Radio. Get over to Small Business Unstuck and listen to Barry. If you're in business, want to be in business, or know somebody in business, he just takes business craziness to a whole new level and tells you exactly how to get it all together. That's it. So thanks, Barry. Well, welcome back, everyone, to Life Interrupted Radio. I'm talking with Christine Wright, And she is an expert in so many things. But today we're talking about when to speak up and when not to speak up, when silence helps and when silence hurts. And if you're feeling overwhelmed by the speed of life and the constantly increasing demands on time, attention, energy, we've been talking about that never-ending list of obligations, Christine's going to now share with us how to speak up, speak our truth, manage that pace of those incoming requests, prioritize our activities, teach us how to say no, when to say no, all of those great things about communication, and also what it's doing to our body when we don't speak up. So welcome back, Christine. We've just been having a great time talking about those voices in our head and how teach from childhood all these crazy things that we now do that harm us in so many ways.
Yes, very definitely. You know, as I was listening to you, what stood out in my mind was the word no. I think that's one of the most misunderstood words in our language. Many times when people say no, they are perceiving that they're rejecting someone, and the person hearing the no is receiving it as a rejection, but no is a choice. And that's one of the things I tell my clients. You need to be able to say no. And there can be no other reason than, well, I don't want to do it in the moment. I love ice cream, but I do not want to have the whole bucket right now. And we don't always give ourselves the choice and the leeway to say no, that no is received as a rejection. You know, I'm not good enough, you're not good enough, you don't love me, you don't want to come to the party. No, it's not that. I'm tired. I want to go to sleep. Why do I have to come to the party? And we don't make it safe for ourselves or the other person to say no. I don't want to spend Thanksgiving dinner with you or Christmas dinner with you. I don't want to go to the New Year's Eve party. I don't want to. And somehow we don't socialize ourselves to use the word. Many times, you know, it's not that there's a bad intention in our communication, in what we're sharing in terms of information or not sharing. It's what we've learned. It's our personal value system. But we need to be able to be comfortable and confident saying no. Just a clear and simple no, that's all right. And we don't always make it all right.
I'm glad you bring that up, because I often say you need to know the cost of the no and the cost of the yes. Because if you're saying yes to everything, you're probably saying no to many things that you wish or want or need to do. And until we put it in what I call a yes and no budget, we don't realize how much the cost of all of those yeses to a lot of things that don't mean anything to us add up to cost us. And oftentimes, unfortunately, I've seen with my clients that the cost is at those that we care about the most. Because we rationalize it that, oh, my spouse will understand, my child will understand. But as you and I both know, time marches so fast that that's not always the case.
Yes. You know, this is where we make those choices. What's in my best interest now? And it's not being selfish. I think especially women, men, there are men too, but I think women are socialized to be far more other-oriented than men are socialized to be. And then some of us, I love helping. I love doing things for other people. But when I'm doing something at my own expense, I need to check in with myself and I say, Christine, are you the one that are extending beyond your own safe and healthy boundaries? That's when I need to guard my boundaries. That's when I need to say, just as you did, what's the cost of the yes and what's the cost of the no? Is this in my best interest at the moment? And what comes to mind, you know, that message they give on the airlines, put your own oxygen mask on first. If you're not helping yourself and you're not in good health and you overextend yourself and you overextend yourself, when you fall down flat, when you can't work another, you know, 20-hour shift or another, you know, two jobs, how many single parents or, you know, people strapped in a condition and you're working more hours than is good for your physical body because I have to do this. But in the end, what's it costing? And this is where we have to use our creative mind to look for alternatives. And I think a lot of times people tend to do things in isolation because we're afraid. If we tell someone, oh, we're having trouble, we're needing help, oh, they may take advantage of us, they may not think as well as of us as they once did, and, you know, there's going to be some embarrassment or some shame. Hey, could you watch the kids? I need to go to a job interview, and I can't pay for a babysitter. Can you help me out here, and I'll do the same thing for you?
Absolutely, and I noticed that in oftentimes when we're have an unusual symptom or a strange symptom, and we don't want to tell our healthcare professional because they'll think we're weird, or, you know, we've gone online and Googled that symptom and it comes out to be some strange, you know, Martian fever or something.
Right.
So we oftentimes are afraid to ask or afraid to speak up for fear of judgment. Now, I know for myself, once I started to practice with great intent, not labeling and not judging other people, it was interesting to me as the more I worked on that and kept it in my conscious mind, like, that's interesting, instead of putting a label or judgment on it, it was interesting to me that my whole world started to change and I noticed people being less judgmental. It was a very odd circle, reciprocity that happened.
That's very lovely and it's very true. I know what part of my own journey is the analytical part of my mind. It loves to identify things and label things. So I have worked to catch myself, when am I judging or when am I looking at information? Because sometimes you do need to look at it to say that this is safe, this is not safe, this is quote-unquote good, this is quote-unquote bad. It took me a while to learn the difference between judgment and discerning.
Oh, good point. Thank you. Let's talk about that a little bit, about what is the difference?
That's very crucial. Most people don't even know that or understand it. Some people don't know when they're judging. I remember I went to a workshop once, and I don't know what I did, and the presenter said to me, you're judgmental. And I'm like, well, excuse me, aren't you being judgmental for judging me as judgmental and saying that in front of the crowd? What exactly are you talking about? And I don't really remember if I was judgmental or not. I'm sure I wasn't. However, learning this discipline, this practice of discretion, I don't know, it's not in elementary school, it's not in the family. So someplace you pick up this soft skill, which is really a very, very important life skill, to look in the moment and say, okay, what's the choice to be made without judging? And that takes time to learn.
And it really takes a lot of a conscious thought, because I know when I'm stressed or pressed for time, all sorts of those things,
yes,
a lot of this happens on autopilot.
That's very true. And that's where the self-reflection helps. What's your baseline? What are you inclined to do? You know, one of the things I remember, and my husband Bob and I, we talk about this from time to time. He said, you know, Chris, you have to tell me. We were driving. I knew we wanted to get off at this particular exit, and I figure he knew it too. He did, but he didn't remember in the moment. And I think when we were about, you're on the highway, right? You're not driving 5 miles an hour. So at the time we were just at the place, I said, there's the exit. Well, I can't do anything about it now, Chris. So, you know, those little moments of, he said, you need to tell me 2 miles before. And I said, oh, yeah, that would make more sense, wouldn't it? So, you know, you're an NLP expert, and my style, as I've mentioned to you, is auditory digital. So sometimes I'll have that conversation in my head and I'm not sharing it. It's not really that helpful to the other person.
No.
You know, it helps if they have a noun, a verb, object. I remember writing a composition in school, and I thought it was great, and the teacher wrote back, what's the point? And I'm like, what does she mean, what's the point? Years later, I looked at the paper, and I said, what the heck was I talking about?
What's the point?
I left it in my head, but at the time, I remembered, you know, and I see that when we work with young children today, we have them write, and they can't read their own writing because they don't yet have the skill, but they remember the story. And one child was trying to read the story, but they couldn't read their writing, and they couldn't remember, and they felt so frustrated. That's what happens many times. The knowledge is inside our head, and we're not communicating it clearly, because this is what you do. And it's such an intricate and infinite skill to learn how to communicate what I intend and the words I use may not be getting my meaning across to you. And I don't know that until you come back and you're angry and you're like, you didn't tell me, I didn't understand, why did you? No, but that's not what I meant.
But I find it happens also, maybe not with anger as an outcome, but oftentimes somebody will tell me a word and I have a completely different definition of the word. I was working with a client one time who would occasionally use the word loopy. Well, I have my own kind of odd definition of that, and I had to say, can you please define what you mean by loopy so we're both clear on it? And I think this happens a lot with autoimmune and people who don't have autoimmune and are our spouse or partners or even medical professionals. When we're trying to describe what's going on for us, we have our own sets of words, but the other person has totally different definitions of what those words might be.
That's an excellent point that you're bringing up, because what I've always said, I try to be precise with my words, but the words can't always communicate the concept, and we may miss the mark a little, and that's where it's always good to allow a bit of grace into the conversation. There's something you said earlier, Sharon, that I want to go back to when you talked about speaking to doctors. A lot of us, and depending what culture we come from and the age we are, our generation, we may have our doctor on a pedestal, and some doctors may have themselves on a pedestal. So when you go in as a patient and you're describing your system, your symptoms and having a conversation, what's the relationship that you have with doctor? I mean, I've had different doctors over the time. Some have been great and we've really been partners in my healthcare. Others, they've been on a pedestal. And I remember when I was looking for a doctor and I just picked someone through the book. I liked what I saw. And I just started out by telling him, you know, what I thought of doctors, not complimentary, but saying that to him, the way he responded to me, I knew that this would work. And I knew that he would listen to me. I knew that he would value what I said and that he wouldn't say, oh, you're just a woman and you're just imagining.
Oh,
this.
That's a good point. And trust, my big thing is when you are in that listening mode and trust your gut instinct. Oftentimes, I know I fired several doctors through this healing process, and because my gut instinct was they just didn't hear a word I said. When they come back and they say, so this is the treatment plan, blah, 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 blah. And I'm, you know, that's really not going to work. Did you hear what I said? I say trust your gut instinct when it comes to your healthcare and you're talking to a medical professional. Yes, you may not know all of, you know, you're looking to this person for their expertise and their training. But if you can't communicate in an open and honest way back and forth, you're really hampering your health and your healing and hampering the doctor's ability to help you if the communication is on two completely different wavelengths.
Right. That's definitely the place where you need to be able to say the truth. And what I've often done, you know, when I've seen a doctor, is I come in with my pen and my paper out. I ask him to spell words. I have the list of questions that I want to ask, you know, and even sometimes I said, don't tell me the contraindications of that drugs because I'll imagine I have them. But I also have a good relationship with my pharmacist. And so I ask those questions there because that's something that I need to know. And if, depending on who your doctor is, or especially if you have an autoimmune disease, because that's as widespread as it is, the symptoms are unknown. The doctor may not know the symptoms. You may not know the symptoms. So by having a conversation, you'll say something and they'll recognize, oh, this is that. But you need to speak it. You need to say the words and you need to feel safe saying, oh my gosh, I was so tired. I don't know why I'm so tired. I have this fever. I can't explain this fever. I don't have an appetite. You need to be able to say it without being afraid that your medical professional is going to come back at you and say, oh, that's just nothing. You just need to do this. You don't want to be dismissed. You want to be heard.
Absolutely. And if you feel you've been dismissed, speak up. I did one time, and he looked at me and he said, would you like a different rheumatologist? And I said,
yes.
I said, yeah, yes, you're right, I would. So, You have to absolutely advocate for yourself. And if you, with autoimmune or any medical condition, if you at that moment in time aren't up to advocating for yourself, I am a huge fan of bringing somebody along, somebody else who you can be your stand-in during those moments when you're not feeling up to advocating for you and your own health care. It's bringing someone along.
Yes, that's a great strategy. And even if you are up to it, because sometimes you may not hear something, and if something happens emotionally, your critical mind may not be working at full speed. So, yes, it's a game show. Bring a friend. Ask a friend. Bring someone with you to advocate for you.
And I'm glad you bring that up, because I remember when I first got the diagnosis, I was by myself. I was alone. But I don't remember much that happened after I heard the word dermatomyositis. Number one, I'd never heard the word, and my brain spent a lot of time just figuring out what did they just say?
Right.
But my ears went closed.
Yes. This is exactly it. The thing, too, is, you know, you may not know it, and what's odd, as you said, in talking about it, you need to choose carefully who you share information with. You know, this is the when silence helps and when it hurts. If you tell one person, are they going to pile on, oh, my gosh, that's terrible, or they... Oh, well, so what does this mean? And what course of action are you going to take that's going to be helpful to you? So, two, when you're sharing something, you want to make sure you're sharing it with an ally and choose not to share it with people who won't be helpful, who will bring you down, and actually move further and further away from those people.
I'm glad you bring that up. It's being selective in our communication is critically important, because at times it can really come back to hurt you, and understanding just from miscommunication or misunderstanding of the intent. I know from NLP we often talk about this idea of the response you got was the message you sent. And let's talk about that a little bit after we come back from this commercial break. We'll just talk about how we talk and how we can, knowing when to stay silent, when to speak, and then when we do choose to speak, how to speak so we get the response we intended back to us, right?
Yes.
So we'll be back after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
Welcome back to Life Interrupted Radio, and I am talking with Christine Wright. And she is from stressfreenow.info. She and her husband run that company, as well as have a fantastic podcast over there at stressfreenow.info. You can get all of their archives and of their evergreen fantastic podcasts about living consciously, living stress-free, and communicating well. As you can tell, that one of Christine's passions is communication and understanding communication. And she has a double NYU graduate. She has a degree in dance education as well as a master's in interdisciplinary arts. And I could just keep going on, because she is a certified practitioner of neurolinguistic programming. And I'm going to mispronounce this. I know I keep saying this. I Ideokinesis?
Very, very good, yes.
Okay.
Ideokinesis.
Ideokinesis. So let's just talk about that for another quick second, because we have chatted about it for a minute, but it just piqued my imagination, and then we'll get back to the topic of understanding how we can clearly send messages when we choose not to be silent, when we choose to speak up, how we can make sure that besides people understanding the words we use, other ways we can make sure our communication is clear. But let's just for a second, because this word just piques my imagination, ideokinesis.
And that's just what the word is. Ideo is imagination. When I first discovered this, I said, where has this been hiding all my life? In my studies at NYU, it was a required course for dancers because our bodies are instrument. And, you know, there was a time in dancing, and maybe it still exists in certain places, you're just going to do whatever you're going to do to your body to get the job done. And that's really not the best way, because you want to use your body after 20 years old. You want it to be in good working order when you're 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 and so on. Ideokinesis is the practice of using imagery to improve your alignment, your range of motion, and your ease of motion. And you do it by being still. Because once you physically make a move, you're engaging your accustomed neural pathways and your accustomed movement patterns. When you imagine what the ideal is and don't move to it, you're creating new neural pathways. So by using the imagery, for example, one of the things is, you know, our head is pretty heavy on our body. To make your head light, you would imagine your head as a balloon and imagine it as a helium-filled balloon floating up to the ceiling, to the sky, rather than saying, stand tall, stand straight. And if you don't do a movement, but just imagine your head as a balloon and you walk around with that feeling, you're energizing different neural pathways. And your head is lighter and doesn't feel so heavy, and you may not be slouching.
Well, that's so interesting, because I took an airplane flight, and I tend to, what I do, call turtling on a flight, sort of squeezing my whole body in. And so this morning I woke up and I've been stretching my neck, and what fascinated me is you just said, imagine your head as a balloon, and it's just a small smidge of me was conscious about imagining it at a balloon, and just in those few seconds that you were describing that, I felt my neck relax. That is so fascinating.
This is exactly what happens. You know, there are many body therapies. I remember I once had a big to-do with one of my instructors about the language and the word to use, and I was like, give it up, will you? And a lot of this is born of a person having an injury. This work was developed by Mabel Todd, and she had an injury. The doctor said, you know, you'll never be the same again. And she said, oh, nonsense, there must be something that I can do. And she developed this body of work using imagery to enhance how easily she moved and how well she moved. And anyone can do this, and you feel the results immediately. You practice it daily. There's a practice of constructive rest where you put your body in a certain position so that you're using the least muscular effort. Because, you know, just sitting up, depending on how we're sitting, we have habituated ways of moving that we either have our muscles in constant contraction or we're constantly overstressing. The repetitive stress injuries, using the same muscles the same way each day, we're not in balance. And ideokinesis, along with other therapies, are a way of balancing the way we move, being aware of how we move. You see, again, if we don't know that we're saying the wrong things or we're not saying the right thing, then we can't fix it. So if we don't realize that our body is tense or that we're moving in a way that's doing harm or we're sitting in a way that's doing harm, that our breath is shallow, that we're not breathing as fully as we can, then we can't correct it. You need to know what's happening, and then you can take action to change it in a way that's going to serve you.
Well, I promise that we'll get back to understanding the words we the words we use and how we use them and all of that. But I'm totally fascinated, and I'm going to keep running down this rabbit hole. I hope you...
Okay, I love it. Let's go.
I hope the listener is equally well, because what I want to tie together here is this idea that we were talking about beforehand is the message you sent. The response you got is the message you sent. But also with this ideokinesis idea, I'm wondering, I know that we've all heard people say things like, oh, that's killing me, or I had a massage therapist, I had a pain in my shoulder, and this was years ago, and she just happened, we're good friends, and she happens to mention, well, if you take the knife out of your back, you'd be fine. Now, I'm wondering about this interplay of ideokinesis and these everyday sort of phrases we use. Oh, he or she was a pain in the rear end. And then all of a sudden you notice you've got a pain in your rear end. Does that, is there a connection between some of these words we use, especially when someone says, oh, you're killing me, or that's to die for? I'm just like, oh my goodness, do you know what you just said?
There is. You know, and this is a chicken or the egg type of equation, in my estimation. We're saying these things, but these things came from someplace. You know, was it the thought, the experience, the action? And that's why in ideokinesis, we have this image of the ideal, and we play the image of the ideal and let the body move to that image. Because we don't always know what it is or where it came from. One of the interesting things in when I worked in class, the way I studied it, we had one session where we worked with the upper body, one session where we worked with the lower body, and one section where we worked with our partner. And my instructor, Andre Bernard, an extraordinary, wonderful soul, he said to the class, when you're doing this work, you may find yourself laughing or crying. There's a memory of an experience in our body. We think it's just in our thoughts and in our mind. But something may have happened to us at some time, and our body froze up. And it's still there. So as you're doing the release, the memory comes out. You know, I think this is done or thought of more with Rolfing or some more invasive body work. But just in releasing something that you have always held, you may experience an emotion and you don't know where that came from. But let's say, you know, you had a car accident way back when, you froze up, you don't remember, you do something, when that muscle releases, you feel terrified or afraid.
So a muscle trigger. Similar to like somebody saying a phrase and it triggers you back to your third grade teacher or something.
You know, when you were hit on the butt with the ruler or something, and it comes back because it's still there.
Fascinating.
And we don't know it. You know, it's easy to see with eating. Food comes in, it goes out. But sometimes thoughts come in, they're not processed properly, they don't go out. Feelings come in, experiences come in, they're not processed properly or completely, they're not shared. So they're still in us, and they're stuck in some way, and that will be the pain in the neck. I can't take it. I can't take it. Just one, not one more minute. And you experience these things, like you said, this pain in the neck, the straw that's going to break my back. You can't identify where it came from, but it did come from someplace, and it's being expressed. Maybe you weren't able to express it at the moment of the incident, however, whatever made it memorable or emotionally charged. Your body's holding it. Your mind is holding it.
Well, you know what's fascinating, Christina, and I love this tangent that we're on. I know it's a little different than where we started, but I love this tangent that we're on, so we're just going to keep running with it, is this idea of being silent and listening to other people and finding out, being aware of the words they use like that, that they just are throwaway words like, oh, he's a pain in the neck, or that just got my goat, whatever that is. And I'm thinking that you could begin to find out so much about what's going on for this person, both mentally and physically, just by listening intently, by staying silent and listening intently to what I'll say are sort of these throwaway lines.
Yes, it's very true. Part of it, too, is, you know, the moments of stillness, of quiet, and I think that for many, it's something to be avoided because it can be fearful. You know, I don't want to sit with my own thoughts, so let me stay active. I don't really know what the numbers are the split on. Some people stay in reflection and they reflect themselves into a stupor. When you reflect, notice those words that you use habitually. Notice those thoughts that you think habitually. And ask yourself, is this true? Am I just locking myself in with this, I can't, oh gosh, I just can never get up. I can't get up early in the morning. I always get up late, you know. If it weren't for so-and-so doing this, I'd be able to do that. When are the thoughts or the feelings true? Or when is it, as you'd said in, I think, one of your broadcasts, you know, when is it why me? When am I creating When am I creating my own pain, my own agony, my own restriction?
Yes. Oh, it's so true. And if you have trouble noticing these yourself, maybe you haven't been, are one of those people that is less reflective and you're working to understand how to be more reflective and doing some of the processes, I would say notice what people say to you. You mentioned that before, that the instructor said just one time something about being judgmental. If in your world you find that people are saying that to you a lot, like, why are you always so sad or angry or whatever, that could be a good sign to maybe self-reflect, take a few moments and do some self-reflection. If everybody else is seeing this, what nonverbal message am I sending out, or maybe verbal message that I'm sending out, that is getting this response back? And that would be a good place to start if we're not one that isn't naturally self-reflective, just going, oh my gosh, I've had five people tell me X. Maybe I should spend a few moments and just reflect on, why am I getting this feedback?
Correct. There's also that aspect, too, of, you know, I don't mean to be going back and forth and back and forth to confuse people, but usually things are happening on a spectrum and we have to look. Sometimes they're misunderstanding the word. As you said, the word means this to you and it means that to me. That when we are having a conversation with someone to find out, do we really have the same meaning and the same understanding? We may not. And sometimes I remember at a family reunion, a cousin, when she came up, and I thanked her time and time again, she said, sometimes you may be holding a grudge against someone for something that never happened. It only happened in your head. You may have misunderstood something and been afraid to say to the person, say, Sharon, you know, when you stole, or, you know, when you took that last piece of cheesecake that I wanted, you know, that really bothered me. And I never said it. And I'm holding a grudge against you for the cheesecake, and you can't understand why I'm, you know, being so stiff when I'm around you, or what's going on. Okay, we all know that example was not what the real things are about. Just check. Maybe it was a misunderstanding. You didn't hear my word right. That's not what I meant by what I said. You need to verify. If you're in a relationship with someone and you care about them, you need to check that. Do you have the same understanding?
Oh, that's so important. Absolutely so important. Because oftentimes it is the littlest things, and then they tend to build on each other until pretty soon you just have a huge mountain of little things. In my experience, it's rarely one huge blow defining moment more often. It's these little things that pile up.
Yes, it's the little things that we save over time, the little things that we never say because we're polite, we don't want to make waves, we, you know, never say anything about someone unless you're saying something good. But hey, if they hurt you, if they did something bad, if they're hurting someone else, speak up. You know, and of course, there's always that risk in sharing information. You don't know if somebody's going to be vindictive and come back to you. You don't know if someone's going to malign your character. You don't know. But do you want to stay in pain? Do you want to stay in silence? Is there a way that you can share safely and unburden yourself? And, you know, sometimes speaking up helps. As you said, you know, this is when we get references. Oh, this doctor is this way. If this is your style, choose this doctor. If this is your style, choose that doctor. You know, I don't recommend buying your shoes from that store. Buy your shoes from this store.
A great point. Great point. And that definitely helps when we can even just begin from that point of asking questions. This is what I'm looking for. Do you have any suggestions? Is a fabulous way to at least start the conversation.
Right, you know, because sometimes we actually push ourselves into helpless. And some of it, it's habituated, it's learned. You know, you may not have been taught to be bold. You didn't get the, you know, if they have a flight simulator for behavior and communications, maybe someone wants to invent that, Sharon. you practice. You have these little role-playing moments of, okay, speak up here. This is how you do it. This will get you the results you want. This is not the time for it. This is not the place. You know, how many times have we maybe seen, we've been in a department store or some situation, and we see a supervisor chewing out a worker? You don't really do that in public. That's mean-spirited. That's unnecessary. Usually you can do that in private. So if we're mindful of what we're doing it and the intent that we have when we come to the table, we can really make pretty good choices. You know, we'll have lapses, and that's where we bring in, you know, the qualities of forgiveness and, you know, the virtues of grace and kindness. One person once said to me, you know, be gentle with yourself. We're learning, and hopefully we're striving to do what's in our best interest and in the best interest of those around us.
I love that. Be gentle with yourself. And, oh, my goodness, you know, Christine, when you and I get together, we could just go on and on and on. But I love that we'll just be leaving it here at that phrase of be gentle with yourself. Please tell the audience how to learn more about you and you, all of your work. Where can they find out more about everything that you do?
Your audience can check out what I do on our website, stressfreenow.info. So that's info, stressfreenow.info. We offer a wide range of services. We do one-on-one coaching. We do client coaching. We do workshops, dreams, your passions, and really build you a roadmap of getting there and just living your life in joy. As one of my clients said to me, which it's true, I'll claim it, I'm an idealist. I really believe that we can live in joy if we're purposeful about it. So you check out our website, stressfreenow.info. If you sign up for our newsletter, you'll be notified when we have our podcast or have different offerings coming down the pike. And you can use the contact form there to get in touch with me, to email me.
Everyone, it's stressfreenow.info. I'll have that up on the website over at Life Interrupted Radio. As always, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Be sure and join me here next Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of Life Interrupted Radio. Enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
This is the EWN Radio Network.